Hi, this is Bennett Tomlin with your Scientific Nutrition Update, the show where in 5 to 10 minutes you get my quick thoughts on something new or interesting in the world of health, nutrition, or fitness. For today's episode, we're going to talk about a topic near and dear to my friends and I, the effects of alcohol on your health. Now, before I start, if you're worried you may have a substance abuse problem, please seek treatment. It's a serious disease with serious consequences. Always remember, I'm not a doctor, and this information is given for informational purposes only. Okay, so now when you first start to lose weight, one of the most common pieces of advice is to completely eliminate alcohol from your diet, that it does nothing for your health, and it will only serve to stall your weight loss. However, what if alcohol actually was not as bad for you as often described? And what if, even more shockingly, alcohol was associated with a lower incidence of obesity? Now, there's a common refrain that alcohol is a poison, and that anyone who drinks it is in some way poisoning their bodies. And in many ways, they aren't wrong, because when alcohol is processed by your liver, it first becomes acetaldehyde, which is very toxic and also carcinogenic. This is then broken down into acetate, which can be oxidized by a whole bunch of different cells in the body. Now, because of our fear our society has around the word cancer, hearing this may already have you rethinking your nightcap. However, the full health effects of alcohol are a little bit more complicated than that. So, alcohol is generally listed as 7 calories per gram, making it one of the most calorie-dense items we consume, behind fats, which are about 9 calories per gram. This again makes it seem like cutting out alcohol would be a good way to help accelerate weight loss. However, again, it seems to be a little more complicated than we thought. There is an effect when you eat called the thermic effect of food, which is the amount of energy burned in the metabolism of that food item. And ethanol, which is the alcohol you drink, has a surprisingly high value. There is some evidence to suggest that due to the metabolic increases that occur after consumption of alcohol, the actual value is about 20% less. So instead of 7 calories per gram, it's closer to 5.6 calories per gram. Obviously still a lot, but not as bad as is often parroted. This suggests to me that our body does not efficiently process alcohol, and this is actually further strengthened by another observation. There was a study done where they did an isocaloric substitution of carbohydrates in the diet with alcohol. So that means they were eating the same number of calories, but some of the calories that used to come from carbohydrates were now coming from alcohol. In this study, the subjects saw initially a very sharp drop in weight and then a continued gradual decline in weight. And this study was done in metabolic ward conditions, and thus should be quite accurate. Now, you may still be wondering if there is some kind of link between alcohol and obesity, and we're going to take a moment to analyze that. There's several studies that seem to suggest that moderate alcohol consumption may actually protect against obesity, especially in women. To figure out what this means for us, we first need to figure out what is meant by moderate drinking. And it seems to be at most 2 to 3 drinks in a day. The traditional college frat guy drinking does not apply in this scenario. However, it does seem to hold that moderate drinking helps protect against obesity. The mechanism for this is very often debated, and it seems to be at least partially that those who are likely to choose to drink alcohol in moderation are more likely to also eat in moderation. So it's more of a correlation than necessarily a causal link. What's important to us, however, is that moderate alcohol consumption is not linked to obesity, and thus if your goal is to lose weight, you do not necessarily need to cut it out. Now, another interesting thing to consider in America is the health crisis that is type 2 diabetes. This is a disease that has reached truly incredible proportions, and anything we can do to try to prevent this disease deserves some consideration. Now, first of all, we need a little bit of background on how type 2 diabetes develops. And before anyone jumps in, I'm not a doctor. I'm simplifying this for the purpose of this podcast. It is not exactly how this happens. But when you consume food, especially carbohydrates, your blood glucose increases. Your pancreas detects this elevated blood glucose level, and it produces insulin. Insulin then drives this glucose into cells, especially your muscle and liver cells, and in these liver and muscle cells, glucose can then be converted to glycogen, which is your body's method of storing glucose for later use. Glycogen can be accessed when blood glucose falls, and so it's important to help maintain that homeostasis. When blood glucose levels are elevated for too long, often due to overconsumption, your cells can eventually develop insulin resistance. When this happens, the pancreas needs to produce more and more insulin to get the glucose out of the blood. If insulin levels get too high, it can start to damage cells. And if it damages the beta pancreatic cells, so the cells in the pancreas that actually produce the insulin, it can then become harder for the pancreas to produce the insulin it needs to. And then this is when type 2 diabetes can become irreversible. What this suggests to us is that any way to increase insulin sensitivity could help prevent type 2 diabetes, and would likely mean diabetics would not necessarily have to give up alcohol. Again, one more time, I'm not a doctor. Consult with your doctor. This is just for informational purposes. Now, the incredible thing is that alcohol does seem to promote insulin sensitivity. There was a large study done on over 1,000 Japanese citizens that seemed to show that alcohol improved insulin sensitivity, and that even more than that, it was dose-dependent, meaning that the more they drank, the stronger the effect. This seems to suggest to us that alcohol in some form modulates the effect of insulin. There is, of course, a question as to how this effect persists in different populations. There was a much smaller study done on postmenopausal women, and that found that moderate alcohol consumption was linked to increased insulin sensitivity. Fasting insulin concentration was reduced by almost 20% after 2 daily drinks. However, there is still a question as to whether or not this increase in insulin sensitivity actually decreases the prevalence of metabolic syndrome and type 2 diabetes. There was a large cross-sectional analysis done on over 8,000 participants that showed that alcohol consumption was linked to a lower incidence of metabolic syndrome, and that furthermore, the greater the alcohol consumption, the greater the reduction in metabolic syndrome. Now, there's still a lot of questions about how this reduction happens. And just before I get started, this next few sentences is going to be some more complicated science. Ignore it if you're not interested in the underlying biochemistry. But there is one reigning hypothesis about how this happens. There is an enzyme in the body called AMPK, adenosine monophosphate kinase, which is responsible for phosphorylation of various other enzymes, activating various other enzymes. So this phosphorylation can activate, deactivate a variety of different enzymes and metabolic pathways in the body. There is a theory that activation of this enzyme by ethanol, by alcohol, can then activate the mTOR pathway, which in turn can contribute to several of these health benefits. The overall details here are not super important, but what is important is that it looks like alcohol can be a part of a healthy diet for people. So now you may be wondering whether alcohol just contributes to an earlier death. And again, the information here is kind of surprising. Moderate drinking is actually associated with a lower risk of mortality. So it turns out drinking in moderation is actually better for your likelihood of dying than not drinking at all. And even heavy drinking of more than 2 drinks per day was not associated with an increase in mortality. So maybe you're thinking alcohol will make you more likely to catch a cold or something. And, well, again, there was a large study done that showed that moderate alcohol consumption is actually associated with a lower likelihood of infection if you're a non-smoker. Now, maybe you're thinking it has to do something with the brain. We've all seen drunk people do some really dumb things. There is no way that alcohol is good in any way, shape, or form for your brain. That would be absurd. Well, it turns out that alcohol consumption is associated with a lower incidence of dementia, and this effect holds up to about 3 drinks per day. However, there is a catch. Heavier alcohol consumption is associated with increased risk of stroke. However, moderate drinking is still associated with a lower incidence of dementia. Now we have to get to where things get problematic. Cancer. Because as we've already discussed, acetaldehyde, the metabolic byproduct of ethanol, is very carcinogenic. And so heavy drinking has been linked to approximately a 30% increase in certain cancers. However, there do seem to be some interesting exceptions. There was a cohort study done on Swedish women that showed moderate drinking was actually linked to a lower incidence of renal cell carcinoma. This suggests that certain types of cancer can actually be decreased by the consumption of alcohol. This study was not necessarily massive, and so I wouldn't necessarily just take it at that conclusion, and I would still conclude, based on my reading of the literature, that alcohol consumption is going to be correlated with a higher incidence of cancer. Now, We also need to remember, alcohol is not some miracle substance. It's associated with an impressive number of liver diseases. It's an addictive substance that runs a distinct risk of damaging people's lives and relationships. Just realize that in moderation, it does seem to have certain health benefits. Now I need to pause for a minute to give credit to Martin Burkhan, who's the author of Lean Gains, which you can find at www.leangains.com. He's done impressive research on a variety of topics, including intermittent fasting and alcohol. If you go on his website, you'll see that he's got another great post on the effects of alcohol on your health. I would really recommend looking into it if you found this podcast interesting. Now, if you want to learn more about intermittent fasting, consider checking out my book, The Optimized Guide to Intermittent Fasting. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. It helps more than you know. Thank you for tuning in, and remember, live long, live healthy, but most of all, live happy. And you know what? A beer helps with that.
Oh, thank you.